The internet, as we know it today, was, you know, more or less invented right here in the United States, but lately we've been slipping off of the cutting edge.
A recent test clocked the U.S. in 31st place when it came to connection speeds, and our next guest says that doesn't tell the whole story, with the new digital divide leaving poor and rural Americans with even worse access.
Susan Crawford joins us now. She's a visiting professor at the Harvard School of Law, a former special assistant to President Obama for science, technology, and innovation. Her new book came out last year, actually, is Captive Audience, the Telecom Industry, a Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. Susan, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks.
So we mentioned that test ranked the U.S. 31st in the world on internet speeds. Are we, in general, falling further and further behind when it comes to our connection speeds?
Yes, we are, and it's going to cause a major problem for the country on the global competitive landscape. Just take a step back here for a second. We're the only developed nation that historically relied on private companies to sell us communication services, and we did it under lots of public burdens to upgrade services, to, you know, sell things at reasonable prices. And as a result, our phone system was the envy of the world when it was introduced. So fast forward to today. Now, high-speed internet access is the substitute for basic phone service. You need it for everything you're going to do to be part of the global economy, and yet we've deregulated the entire sector. So these companies aren't evil. It's just not in their interest to do anything other than divide markets, systematically leave the poor behind, overcharge people in urban areas, and avoid capital expenditures on upgrading their networks. So we don't have a plan to upgrade to fiber across the country, and we're leaving a lot of Americans behind, which is going to just exacerbate and amplify and enmesh the existing inequalities that our country is suffering.
Let's get into that issue of unequal access. Who is being left out? Even the, you know, the average speed that's low in the world, a lot of us are falling behind that. Who isn't getting that speed?
Well, again, it's just rational, but for a private company to serve a rural area isn't necessarily in its interest, especially when it comes to running a wire out to that area, like a fiber optic wire. And so by and large, they don't. Verizon's Fios service is the only national available fiber optic connection, and that's only available in wealthy suburbs, essentially, on the coasts, and not available to the rest of the nation. So lots of people, either lower income people or people in rural areas, are stuck with either DSL, which is the new dial-up. It just is using your old copper phone lines to reach the internet, sometimes wireless, sometimes satellite. And these aren't substitutes for the world-class connection, which is fiber.
The rural connection is a big issue, an ongoing issue here in Wisconsin. Do you know how Wisconsin compares to the rest of the country, to the rest of the world?
Well, Wisconsin's pretty middling, and I want to tell you a story about a place I just went to yesterday in a rural area of Maine, Rockport, Maine. There, the town decided to build its own neutral fiber network, so a wholesale fiber network that connects to the big fiber optic link in Maine, the backbone there. And so the town isn't entering the private market. It just decided that it was a good idea to provide wholesale fiber that private internet access providers could ride on top of. They're going to see gigabit service for about $70 a month. And in Wisconsin right now, the best you can get, as far as I can tell, is about 20 times as slow as what that little tiny town in Maine is going to experience.
And that's one thing you've talked about in the past, municipalities, local governments getting into the game and providing their own infrastructure. But that's not even legal for cities to do in every state around the country. Is that right?
That's right. There are 20 states that either make it difficult or impossible to do it. And I have good news for you, which is that Wisconsin falls into the difficult category. It's definitely difficult. The cities have to hold public hearings in Wisconsin and conduct feasibility studies showing how expensive the network will be over 3 years before they can even start building a municipal network. And cities aren't allowed to subsidize those telecom services, and they have to charge minimum prices. It looks as if AT&T has enormous power in Wisconsin and was able to, for example, instruct the state legislature to mandate that the University of Wisconsin pay for AT&T services, double what they would have to pay to the nonprofit WiskNet there. So there are several little towns in Wisconsin that have built successful municipal fiber networks. Reedsburg is a good example, about 9,000 people. And in 1998, they built a fiber network for the schools in the city, and they've expanded to all the homes, and 60% of the people there are buying fiber. So they've got that gigabit service. Sheboygan County, the city of Sheboygan, is doing the same thing. Whitewater, Sun Prairie, I understand, is now thinking about it. So mayors and city councils all over Wisconsin are very interested in fixing this situation, and but they have to be very brave. They have to have all those public hearings, which can be very easily lobbied, and conduct these studies and also show that these networks are going to be expensive, and they are. This is just like building a railroad or building any piece of basic infrastructure. The upfront costs are high. The payoffs for society are extraordinary once they're in place.
Let's get into that payoff a little. I imagine some people might be listening thinking, all right, my cat videos download a little slower. I think of the internet as an entertainment system, as a luxury. Make the case that that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, not at all. So again, let me go back to Rockport, Maine. There's a media college there where the students are studying with the world-class photography and film artists. They need to be able to upload very large files to sell to clients. And there's a small business there that does nothing but provide web services. With the existing internet access service in that little town, they couldn't keep young people there because the uploading capacity, the ability to run a business from your home was just not present with the networks that they had. Everything is moving to the cloud. That means we all are going to have to swap around big files, including video of ourselves in meetings. The ability to enter a classroom requires a lot of capacity on your end. Let's say you want to provide very good telemedicine services. They're going to require fiber, too. All the talk about smart cities is going to need fiber for all the access points to make sure we're collecting all that information. So the internet is just the basic general-purpose network. It is the substitute for the phone. And just as we couldn't imagine the uses for electricity when it first came around, we're having some trouble imagining uses for fiber. But I assure you, Americans are inventive, and they will come up with those uses.
We're talking to Susan Crawford with Harvard Law School, looking at slow internet speeds here in the U.S. as compared to much of the rest of the developed world and unequal access within the United States as well. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you have a fast connection available where you live, or do you have limited options, high prices? Are your kids able to get online and do their homework at home? Can you apply for a job at home? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue the conversation about the slow American internet. We've got law professor Susan Crawford with us. She's the author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. You can join the conversation. What's the internet like where you are? What options do you have? What difference does it make in your life? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to the phones now. We've got Adrian on the line in Trempealeau. Adrian, hi.
Hi. Just wanted to comment that I am looking for a house, and the availability of internet is one of the big things because I have the opportunity to work from home. But I don't have, there isn't enough accessibility for me to be able to do my job from home in most of the communities around where I live in the rural areas.
Adrian, thank you so much for sharing that story. Good luck with a house hunt, by the way. Susan, is that a story we're going to be hearing more and more over time?
Absolutely. We should be able to work where we live, not have to live where we work. But too many Americans just can't do that because they can't get a reliable connection. And this has lots of knock-on effects. It makes it difficult for rural areas to maintain their character. It makes it difficult for kids to be convinced to stay in communities where they grew up. And it ties people to driving long distances and getting on planes, all of which we know is bad for the planet. So, yes, we're going to be hearing more and more about the need for very high-capacity upload and download symmetrical connections. So that people can have the freedom to live in the most beautiful place they can.
And Trempealeau is a beautiful place. Good luck, Adrian. We've got Tim on the line in Osseo. Tim, hi.
Hi. I sell internet for a living as part of my job. but we sell it specifically to rural areas. Hmm. The problem that I see is not the speed, because we have three different services that I offer that give you 20 meg speed or better download. The issue that I see are data limits. It seems like everyone who wants to serve anywhere rural wants to put data caps on it. So if you want to be able to do any more than check your emails, you can do it very quickly, but you'll run out of data.
Tim, thank you so much for bringing that up. Is that another important piece of the puzzle, Susan?
Yeah, and it's crushing. I mean, in Stockholm or in Seoul, communications are unlimited, essentially. You never think about the cost of them. You get a gigabit connection for $30, and having that connection is just effortless because you never have to wait, you never have to worry, and you can start new businesses in anything from virtual reality to telemedicine. We're not even able to imagine that now. It's as if it's almost hard to explain what the difference is between what the reality should be for America and where we are now. It's like we're sipping through a very, very narrow straw when there should be an enormous culvert of information flowing into every house and flowing up from every house.
Tim, thanks again for bringing that up. We go to Madison now with Ben. Ben, hi.
Hi. Thanks, guys, for taking my call. I think earlier you maybe cited we're something like 31st worldwide. And I was just curious how population density relates to that. Obviously, we're quite a sprawling country. So if you'd maybe just comment on that aspect.
I was wondering about that, too. Is geography our enemy here? If we were a small, compact country, would that make lives easier?
No, there's no real correlation between the density of population and the Internet speeds. And again, it's not just speed. It's capacity and price. And when you look at all of these metrics, there are lots of countries where they have, you know, sparse populations. Let's take Sweden, for example. It's even more sparsely populated than the United States. But every little village, or more than 250 of them, has a dark fiber network that it owns and that it makes available to private providers. So they all take very high connectivity, cheap services for granted, just as the United States took its phone service for granted when it was first launched.
Ben, thanks for the call. Julie is on the line now in Milwaukee. Julie, hi.
Hi. My daughter just returned from a year in Southeast Asia, and my call is really actually a pretty good one, follow-up to the last comment. It wasn't about speed, but rather accessibility. She was in remote Indonesia, Nepal, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, and there was never a problem with neither speed nor accessibility. She was in very remote villages, and they all had access to the fiber optics. The only she had a problem one time when monkeys in a remote area of Indonesia had eaten through the fiber optic.
Wow.
It's very sad. And having two kids, one at UW-Platteville and one at University of Minnesota, the Internet was better in rural remote areas of in Southeast Asia.
Julie, thanks for the call. Your reaction, Susan?
You know, we should be looking the rest of the world in the rearview mirror. And yet, for some reason, this issue has not risen to the top of the policy radar screen the same way that the electrification of America was the leading policy question in the 1930s presidential campaigns. The situations are exactly parallel. In the early days of electrification, 90% of farmers didn't have it at the time when rich people did in New York City. And so FDR just took on the special private interests that were controlling electricity and got it regulated, made it available to rural players. We don't, at the moment, seem to have the leadership and the attention to this issue that it deserves. I personally think this is the most important infrastructure issue the United States faces right now, and we're nowhere.
Well, you've talked about some local communities taking this issue on. What would it take to make it a priority at the federal level, at the national level?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that we're seeing more and more mayors getting fed up, and even big city mayors willing to take on the special interests of Comcast and Verizon in their cities. And gradually, it'll become embarrassing to the federal government not to set a very high standard for Internet access service in this country. But the cities are going to come first, because mayors are sovereigns in a way that maybe Mr. Obama doesn't see himself for this purpose, for communications services. And the National Conference of Mayors has already said this is an important issue for them. And so I'm quite hopeful that in the next few months, even, we'll see a lot of activity in cities to take on these problems.
Briefly, we've seen countries like South Korea make faster nationwide internet a priority as an economic priority. How fast do we fall behind if we don't start catching up?
We're already, I'd say, 5 to 7 years behind South Korea. But here's our advantage. We're much more entrepreneurial as a people than the Koreans, I think. They've grown up with these giant conglomerates like Samsung who just buy any new business. And so young people aren't as naturally ready to start new things as they are in the United States. So once we make the step to have fiber, I think the great new applications, uses of that fiber will come from the United States. Right now, though, we don't have that sandbox for people to develop new things. So I think we'll catch up quickly once we put this in, but right now we're pretty hopelessly behind.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That was Susan Crawford, visiting professor at Harvard University's Law School. She's author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age.